This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents Regretting You by Colleen Hoover, performed by Tanya Eby and Lauren Ezzo.
Chapter 1. Morgan. I wonder if humans are the only living creatures that ever feel hollow inside. I don't understand how my body can be full of everything bodies are full of, bones and muscles and blood and organs, yet my chest sometimes feels vacant, as if someone could scream into my mouth and it would echo inside of me. I've been feeling this way for a few weeks now. I was hoping it would pass because I'm beginning to worry about what's causing this emptiness. I have a great boyfriend I've been dating for almost 2 years now, if I don't count Chris's moments of intense teenage immaturity, mostly fueled by alcohol. He's everything I want in a boyfriend. Funny, attractive, loves his mother, has goals. I don't see how he could be the cause of this feeling. And then there's Jenny, my little sister, my best friend. But I know she's not the source of my emptiness. She's the primary source of my happiness. Even though we're complete opposites, she's outgoing, spontaneous, and loud, and has a laugh I'd kill for. I'm quieter than she is, and more often than not, my laughter is forced. It's a running joke between us that we are so different. If we weren't sisters, we would hate each other. She'd find me boring, and I'd find her annoying, but because we're sisters, and only 12 months apart, our differences somehow work. We have our moments of tension, but we never let an argument end without a resolution. And the older we get, the less we argue and the more we hang out. Especially now that she's dating Chris's best friend, Jonah. The four of us have spent almost every waking hour together as a group since Chris and Jonah graduated high school last month. My mother could be the source of my recent mood, but that wouldn't make sense. Her absence isn't anything new. In fact, I'm more used to it now than I used to be. So if anything, I've become more accepting of the fact that Jenny and I got the short end of the stick in the parent department. She's been inactive in our lives since our father died 5 years ago. I was more bitter about having to parent Jenny back then than I am now. And the older I get, the less it bothers me that she's not the type of mother to meddle in our lives, or give us a curfew, or care. It's honestly kind of fun being 17, and given the freedom most kids my age would dream of. Nothing has changed in my life recently to explain this profound emptiness I've been feeling. Or maybe it has, and I'm just too afraid to notice it. Guess what? Jenny says. She's in the front passenger seat, Jonah is driving, and Chris and I are in the back seat. I've been staring out the window during my bout of self-reflection, so I pause my thoughts and look at her. She's turned around in her seat, her eyes moving excitedly between me and Chris. She looks really pretty tonight. She borrowed one of my maxi dresses and kept it simple with very little makeup. It's amazing what a difference there is between 15-year-old Jenny and 16-year-old Jenny. Hank said he can hook us up tonight. Chris slips a hand and high-fives Jenny. I look back out the window. Not sure I like that she likes to get high. I've done it a handful of times, a byproduct of having the mother that we do. But Jenny is only 16 and partakes in whatever she can get her hands on at every party we go to. That's a big reason why I choose not to partake, because I've always felt a sense of responsibility for her since I'm older, and our mother doesn't regulate our activities in any way. Sometimes I feel like I'm Chris's babysitter, too. The only one in this car I don't have to babysit is Jonah, but that's not because he doesn't get drunk or high. He just seems to maintain a level of maturity, despite whatever substances might be running through his system. He has one of the most consistent personalities I've ever encountered. He's quiet when he's drunk, quiet when he's high, quiet when he's happy, and somehow even quieter when he's mad. He's been Chris's best friends since they were kids, and they're like the male versions of me and Jenny, but opposite. Chris and Jenny are the life of every party. Jonah and I are the invisible sidekicks. Fine by me. I'd rather blend in with the wallpaper and quietly enjoy people watching than be the one standing on a table in the center of a room, being the one people are watching. How far out is this place? Jonah asks.
About 5 more miles, Chris says. Not far.
Maybe not far from here, but far from our houses.
Who's driving home tonight? Jonah asks.
Not it,
Jenny and Chris both say at the same time. Jonah glances at me in the rearview mirror. He holds my stare for a moment, and then I nod. He nods, too. Without even speaking, we've both agreed we'll stay sober tonight. I don't know how we do it, communicate without communicating, but it has always been an effortless thing between us. Maybe it's because we're a lot alike, so our minds are in sync a lot of the time. Jenny and Chris don't notice. They don't need to communicate silently with anyone because anything and everything they need to say rolls off the tips of their tongues, whether it should or not. Chris grabs my hand to get my attention. When I look up at him, he kisses me.
You look pretty tonight, he whispers.
I smile at him. Thank you. You don't look so bad yourself.
Want to stay at my house tonight?
I think about that for a second, but Jenny spins around in her seat again and answers for me. She can't leave me alone tonight. I'm a minor about to spend the next 4 hours ingesting a lot of alcohol and maybe an illegal substance. Who's going to hold back my hair while I vomit in the morning if she stays at your place?
Chris shrugs. Jonah?
Jenny laughs. Jonah has typical parents who want him home by midnight. You know that.
Jonah just graduated high school, Chris says, talking about him like he's not in the front seat listening to every word. He should man up and stay out all night for once.
Jonah is pulling the car into a gas station when Chris says that.
Anyone need anything?
Jonah asks, ignoring the conversation being had about him.
Yeah, I'm going to try to buy some beer,
Chris says, unbuckling his seatbelt. That actually makes me laugh. You look every minute of 18. They aren't going to sell you beer. Chris grins at me, taking that comment as a challenge. He gets out of the car to go inside, and Jonah gets out to pump gas. I reach into Jonah's console and grabs one of the watermelon Jolly Ranchers he always leaves behind. Watermelon is the best flavor. I don't understand how anyone could hate it, but apparently he does. Jenny unbuckles her seatbelt and crawls into the back seat with me. She curls her legs beneath her, facing me. Her eyes are full of mischief when she says, I think I'm going to have sex with Jonah tonight. For the first time in ages, my chest feels full, but not in a good way. It feels like it's being flooded with thick water, maybe even mud. You just turned 16. The same age you were when you had sex with Chris for the first time. Yeah, but we had been dating longer than 2 months, and I still regret it. It hurt like hell, lasted maybe a minute, and he smelled like tequila. I pause because it sounds like I just insulted my boyfriend's skills. He got better. Jenny laughs but then falls back against the seat in a sigh. I feel like it's commendable that I've held out 2 months. I want to laugh because 2 months is nothing. I'd rather her wait an entire year. Or 5. I don't know why I'm so against this. She's right, I was younger than her when I started having sex. And if she's going to lose her virginity to someone, at least it's to someone I know is a good person. Jonah has never taken advantage of her. In fact, he's known Jenny for an entire year and never made a pass at her until she was 16. It was frustrating to her, but it made me respect him. I sigh. You lose your virginity once, Jenny. I don't want this moment to be while you're drunk in a stranger's house, having sex on someone else's bed. Jenny moves her head from side to side like she's actually contemplating what I've said. Then maybe we could do it in his car. I laugh, but not because that's funny. I laugh because she's making fun of me. That's exactly how I lost my virginity to Chris, cramped in the back seat of his father's Audi. It was absolutely unremarkable and wholly embarrassing. And even though we got better, it would be nice if our first time had been something we could look back on with fonder memories. I don't even want to think about this or talk about it. It's hard being best friends with my little sister for this very reason. I want to be excited for her and hear all about it, but at the same time, I want to protect her from making the same mistakes I made. I always want better for her. I look at her sincerely, trying my best not to seem motherly. If it happens tonight, just stay sober, at least. Jenny rolls her eyes at my advice and crawls back in the front seat just as Jonah opens his door. Chris is back, too, without beer. He slams his door and folds his arms over his chest.
Really sucks having a baby face.
I laugh and run my hand across his cheek, pulling his focus to mine. I like your baby face. That makes him smile. He leans in and kisses me, but pulls away as soon as his lips meet mine. He taps Jonah's seat.
You try it.
Chris takes cash out of his pocket and reaches into the front, dropping it on the console.
Won't there be plenty of alcohol there?
Jonah asks.
It's the biggest graduation party of the year. The entire senior class will be there, and every one of us are underage. We need all the reinforcements we can get.
Jonah reluctantly grabs the cash and gets out of the car. Chris kisses me again, this time with tongue. He pulls back pretty quickly, though.
What's in your mouth?
I crunch down on the Jolly Rancher to break it. Candy?
I want some,
he says, bringing his mouth back to mine. Jenny groans from the front seat.
Stop! I can hear you slurping.
Chris pulls back with a grin, but also with a piece of Jolly Rancher in his mouth. He bites down on it while putting on his seatbelt.
It's been 6 weeks since we graduated. Who has a graduation party 6 weeks after graduation? Not that I'm complaining. Just seems like we should be past the graduation celebrations by now.
It hasn't been 6 weeks. It's only been 4, I say.
6, he corrects. It's July 11th.
6? I try to keep the sudden onslaught of tension in every single muscle in my body from being visible to Chris, but I can't help but have a reaction to what he just said. Every part of me stiffens. It hasn't been 6 weeks.
Has it?
If it's been 6 weeks, that means I'm 2 weeks late for my period. Shit. Shit, shit, shit. The trunk to Jonah's car pops open. Chris and I both spin around, just as Jonah slams the trunk shut and walks to the driver's side door. When he gets in the car, he has a smug smile on his face.
Motherfucker, Chris mutters, shaking his head. She didn't even card you?
Jonah puts the car in drive and begins to pull out.
It's all in the confidence, my friend.
I watch as Jonah reaches across the seat and takes Jenny's hand. I look out the window, my stomach in knots, my palms sweating, my heart pounding, my fingers quietly counting the days since my last period. I haven't given it any thought at all. I know it was graduation because Chris was bummed we couldn't have sex. But I've just been expecting to get it any day now, thinking it's only been a month since they graduated. The 4 of us have been so busy doing a ton of nothing during summer break that I haven't even thought about it. 12 days. I'm 12 days late. It's all I've thought about all night while at this graduation party. I want to borrow Jonah's car keys, drive to a 24-hour pharmacy, and buy a pregnancy test. But that would only make him ask questions. And Jenny and Chris would notice my absence. Instead, I have to spend the entire evening surrounded by music so loud I can feel it cracking in my bones. There are sweaty bodies in every part of this house, so there's nowhere I can escape to. I'm too scared to drink now, because if I am pregnant, I have no idea what that could do. I've never given pregnancy much thought, so I don't know exactly how much alcohol can harm a fetus. I won't even take that chance. I can't believe this.
Morgan!
Chris yells from across the room. He's standing on a table. Another guy is standing on a table next to him. They're playing a game where they balance on one leg and take turns downing shots until one of them falls. It's Chris's favorite drinking game and my least favorite time to be around him, but he's waving me over. Before I make it across the room, the guy on the other table falls, and Chris raises a victorious fist in the air. Then he jumps down just as I reach him. He wraps an arm around me, pulling me to him.
You're being boring, he says.
He brings his cup to my mouth.
Drink. Be merry.
I push the cup away. I'm driving us all home tonight. I don't want to drink.
No, Jonah's driving tonight. You're good.
Chris tries again to give me another drink, but I push it away again. Jonah wanted to drink, so I told him I'd drive. I lie. Chris looks around, spotting someone nearby. I follow his gaze to see Jonah sitting on the couch next to Jenny, whose legs are draped across his lap.
You're DD tonight, right?
Jonah glances at me before answering Chris. It's a 2-second silent conversation, but Jonah can see in my pleading expression that I need him to tell Chris he's not. Jonah tilts his head a little in curiosity, but then looks at Chris.
Nope, I'm getting hammered.
Chris slumps his shoulders and looks back at me.
Fine, I guess I'll have to have fun all alone.
I'm trying not to be insulted by his words, but it's hard not to be. Are you saying I'm not any fun when I'm sober?
You are fun, but drunk Morgan is my favorite Morgan.
Well, that kinda makes me sad. But he's drunk, so I'll excuse his insults right now, even if it's just to avoid an argument. I'm not in the mood. I've got more important things on my mind. I pat Chris's chest with both hands. Well, drunk Morgan won't be here tonight, so go find people you can have fun with. Right when I say that, someone grabs Chris's arm and pulls him back to the tables.
Rematch,
the guy says. With that, my level of sobriety is no longer Chris's concern, so I take that as an opportunity to escape from him, this noise, these people. I walk out the back door and am met with a quieter version of the party and a blast of fresh air. There's an empty chair next to the pool, and even though there's a couple in the water I'm almost certain are doing things that should be deemed unsanitary in a swimming pool, it's somehow less of a nuisance than being inside that house. I position my chair so that I can't see them, and I lean back and close my eyes. I spend the next few minutes trying not to obsess over any symptom I may or may not have had this past month. I don't even have time to start thinking about what all of this might mean for my future when I hear a chair being dragged across the concrete behind me. I don't even want to open my eyes and see who it is. I can't take Chris and all his drunkenness right now. I can't even take Jenny and her combination of wine coolers, weed, and being 16.
You okay?
I sigh from relief when I hear Jonah's voice. I tilt my head and open my eyes, smiling at him. Yeah, I'm fine. I can see in his expression that he doesn't believe me, but whatever. There's no way I'm telling Jonah I'm late for my period because A, it's none of his business, and B, I don't even know if I'm pregnant, and C, Chris is the first person I'll tell if I am. Thanks for lying to Chris, I say. I just really don't feel like drinking tonight. Jonah nods in understanding and offers me a plastic cup. I notice he's holding two, so I take one from him.
It's soda, he says. Found a rogue can buried in one of the coolers.
I take a sip and lean my head back. Soda tastes so much better than alcohol anyway. Where's Jenny? Jonah nudges his head toward the house.
Taking table shots. I couldn't stay to watch.
I groan. I hate that game so much. Jonah laughs.
How did we both end up with people who are our exact opposites?
You know what they say. Opposites attract. Jonah shrugs. I find it odd that he shrugs at that. He stares at me for a moment, then looks away and says,
I heard what Chris said to you. I don't know if that's why you're out here, but I hope you know he didn't mean it. He's drunk. You know how he gets at these parties.
I like that Jonah is defending Chris right now. Even though Chris can sometimes be a little insensitive, Jonah and I both know that his heart is bigger than both of ours put together. I might be mad if he did this all the time, but it's a graduation party. I get it. He's having fun, and he wants me to have fun with him. In a way, he's right. Drunk Morgan is way better than sober Morgan. Jonah looks at me pointedly.
I wholeheartedly disagree with that.
As soon as he says that, I pull my eyes from his and look down at my drink. I do this because I'm afraid of what's happening right now. My chest is starting to feel full again, but in a good way this time. That emptiness is being replaced with heat and flutters and heartbeats, and I hate it because it feels like I've just pinpointed what has caused me to feel so empty these past few weeks. Jonah. Sometimes when we're alone, he looks at me in a way that makes me feel empty when he looks away. It's a feeling I've never gotten when Chris looks at me. This realization scares me to death. Until lately, it seems I've gone my whole life without experiencing this feeling, But now that I have, it's as if part of me disappears when the feeling disappears. I cover my face with my hands. Out of all the people in the world to want to be around, it's a shitty realization to know Jonah Sullivan is starting to top that list. It's like my chest has been on a constant search for its missing piece, and Jonah is holding it in his fist. I stand up. I need to get away from him. I'm in love with Chris, so it makes me uncomfortable and itchy when I'm alone with his best friend and having these feelings. Maybe it's the soda making me feel this way, or the fear that I might be pregnant. Maybe it has nothing to do with Jonah. I've been standing for all of 5 seconds when, out of nowhere, Chris appears. His arms tighten around me right before he propels us both into the pool. I'm both pissed and relieved, because I needed to get away from Jonah. But now I'm sinking into the deep end of a pool that I had no intentions of getting into fully clothed. I surface at the same time Chris does, but before I can yell at him, he pulls me to him and kisses me. I kiss him back because it's a much-needed distraction.
Where's Jenny?
Chris and I both look up, and Jonah is looming over us, glaring down at Chris.
Don't know,
Chris says. Jonah rolls his eyes.
I asked you to keep an eye on her. She's drunk.
Jonah walks toward the house to find Jenny.
So am I, Chris says. Never ask a drunk person to babysit a drunk person.
Chris moves a few feet until he can touch, and then he pulls me with him. He rests his back against the wall of the pool and positions me so that I'm holding on to his neck, facing him.
I'm sorry for what I said earlier. I don't think any version of you is boring.
I purse my lips together, relieved he noticed he was being an ass.
I just wanted you to have fun tonight. I don't think you're having fun.
I am now. I force a smile because I don't want him to notice the turmoil beneath my surface. But I can't help but be worried, no matter how hard I try to put it off until I know for certain. I'm worried for myself, for him, for us, for the child we might be bringing into this world way before either of us is ready. We can't afford this. We aren't prepared. I don't even know that Chris is the person I want to spend the rest of my life with. That's definitely something a person should be certain about before they go and create a human together.
Want to know what my favorite thing about you is?
Chris asks. My shirt keeps floating up to the surface, so he tucks the front of it into my jeans.
You're a sacrificer. I don't even know if that's a real word, but that's what you are. You do things you don't want to do to make life better for the people around you. Like being the designated driver. That doesn't make you boring. It makes you a hero.
I laugh. Chris becomes complimentary when he's drunk. Sometimes I make fun of him for it, but I secretly love it.
You're supposed to say something you love about me now, he says.
I look up and to the left, like I'm having to think hard. He squeezes my side playfully. I love how much fun you are, I say. You make me laugh, even when you frustrate me. Chris smiles, and a dimple appears in the center of his chin. He has such a great smile. If I am pregnant and we do end up having a child together, I hope it at least has Chris's smile. That's the only positive thing I can think of that could come from this situation.
What else? He asks.
I reach my hand up and touch his dimple, fully prepared to tell him I love his smile. But instead I say, I think you'll make a great dad someday. I don't know why I say that. Maybe I'm testing the waters, seeing what his reaction will be. He laughs.
Hell yeah, I will. Clara is gonna love me.
I tilt my head. Clara?
My future daughter. I've already named her. Still working on a boy name, though.
I roll my eyes. What if your future wife hates that name? He slides his hands up my neck and grips my cheeks.
You won't.
Then he kisses me. And even though his kiss doesn't fill up my chest like Jonah's looks sometimes do, I feel a comforting reassurance in this moment, in his words, in his love for me. Whatever happens, when I finally take a pregnancy test tomorrow, I'm confident he'll support me. It's just who Chris is.
Guys, we should go,
Jonah says. Chris and I separate and look up at Jonah. He's holding Jenny. Her arms are wrapped around his neck, and her face is pressed against his chest. She's groaning.
I told her not to get on that table,
Chris mutters, climbing out of the pool. He helps me out, and we squeeze as much water as we can from our clothes before heading to Jonah's car. Luckily, the seats are leather. I get in the driver's seat since Chris assumes Jonah has been drinking. Jonah gets in the back seat with Jenny. Chris is flipping through songs on the radio when we pull away from the party. Bohemian Rhapsody has just started playing on one of the stations, so Chris turns it up and starts to sing. A few seconds later, Jonah is singing along. Surprisingly, I quietly join them. There's no way any human can hear this song while driving and not sing along. Even if they're in the midst of a pregnancy scare at the age of 17, while feeling things for someone in the backseat of a car that they should only be feeling for the person in the front passenger seat.
Chapter 2. Clara. 17 years later. I look at my passenger seat and cringe. As usual, there are crumbs of an unknown source caked in the crevices of the leather. I grab my backpack and toss it in the back seat, along with an old fast food bag and two empty water bottles. I attempt to swipe the crumbs away. I think it might be pieces of banana bread that Lexi was eating last week. Or it could be the crumbs from the bagel she was eating on our way to school this morning. Several graded papers are crumpled on my floorboard. I reach for them, swerving toward the ditch before righting the wheel and deciding to leave the papers where they are. A presentable car isn't worth dying for. When I reach the stop sign, I pause and give this decision the contemplation it deserves. I can keep driving toward my house, where my whole family is preparing for one of our traditional birthday dinners. Or I can do a U-turn and head back toward the top of the hill, where I just passed Miller Adams standing on the side of the road. He's avoided me for all of the last year, but I can't leave someone I even sort of know stranded in this heat, no matter how awkward it might be between us. It's almost 100 degrees outside. I have the air conditioner on, but beads of sweat are sliding down my back, being soaked up by my bra. Lexi wears her bra for an entire week before washing it. She says she just douses it in deodorant every morning. To me, wearing a bra twice before washing it is almost as bad as wearing the same pair of underwear 2 days in a row. Too bad I don't apply the same philosophy of cleanliness to my car that I apply to my bras. I sniff the air and my car smells of mildew. I debate spraying a bit of the deodorant I keep in my console, but if I decide to turn the car around and offer Miller a ride, my car will smell like freshly sprayed deodorant. And I'm not sure which is worse. A car that effortlessly smells like mildew, or a car that purposefully smells like fresh deodorant to cover up the smell of mildew. Now I'm trying to impress Miller Adams. It's hard for me to worry about the opinion of a guy who seems to go out of his way to avoid me. But I do, for some reason. I never told Lexi this because it embarrasses me, but at the beginning of this year, Miller and I were assigned lockers next to each other. That lasted all of 2 hours before Charlie Banks started using Miller's locker. I asked Charlie if his locker had been reassigned, and he told me Miller offered him $20 to switch lockers. Maybe it had nothing to do with me, but it felt personal. I'm not sure what I did to make him dislike me, and I try not to care about his feelings behind his avoidance of me. But I don't like that he doesn't like me, so I'll be damned if I pass him up and offer validation to his feelings because I'm nice, damn it. I'm not this terrible person he seems to think I am. I make the U-turn. I need his impression of me to change, even if it's merely for selfish reasons. When I approach the top of the hill, Miller is standing next to a road sign, holding his cell phone. I don't know where his car is, and he certainly isn't on this road because he's out for a casual run. He's wearing a pair of faded blue jeans and a black t-shirt, each a death sentence of their own in this heat, but paired together? Heatstroke is a strange way to want to go out, but To each his own. He's watching me as I loop my car around and park behind him. He's about 5 feet away from the front of my car, so I can see the smirk on his face when he slides his cell phone into his back pocket and looks up at me. I don't know if Miller realizes what his attention, or lack thereof, can do to a person. When he looks at you, he does it in such a way that it makes you feel like the most interesting thing he's ever seen. He puts his entire body into the look, somehow. He leans forward, his eyebrows draw together in curiosity. He nods his head. He listens. He laughs. He frowns. His expressions while he listens to people are captivating. Sometimes I watch him from afar as he holds conversations with people, secretly envious they're getting his rapt attention. I've always wondered what a full-on conversation would be like with him. Miller and I have never even had a conversation one-on-one, but there have been times I've caught him glancing at me in the past, and even a simple one-second graze of his attention can send a shiver through me. I'm starting to think maybe I shouldn't have made the U-turn. But I did. And I'm here. So I roll down my window and swallow my nerves. It's at least another 13 days before the next Greyhound. Need a ride? Miller stares at me a moment, then looks behind him at the empty roadway, as if he's waiting for a better option to come along. He wipes sweat from his forehead, then his focus lands on the sign he's gripping. The anticipation swirling around in my stomach is a clear signal that I care a lot about the opinion of Miller Adams, as much as I can try and convince myself that I don't. I hate that things are weird between us, even though nothing has happened that I'm aware of that would make them weird. But the way he avoids me makes it feel like we've had issues in the past, when really we've had no interaction at all. It almost feels similar to breaking up with a guy and then not knowing how to navigate a friendship with him after the breakup. As much as I wish I didn't care to know anything about him, it's hard not to want attention from him, because he's unique and cute, especially right now, with his ranger's cap turned backward and wisps of dark hair peeking out from beneath it. He's long overdue for a haircut. He usually keeps it shorter, but I noticed when we started back to school that it got a lot longer over the summer. I like it like this. I like it short, too. Shit. I've been paying attention to his hair. I feel I've subconsciously betrayed myself. He's got a sucker in his mouth, which isn't unusual. I find his addiction to suckers amusing, but it also gives off a cocky vibe. I don't feel like insecure guys would walk around eating candy as much as he does, but he always shows up to school eating a sucker and usually has one in his mouth at the end of lunch. He pulls the sucker out of his mouth and licks his lips, and I feel every bit of the sweaty 16-year-old that I am right now. "Can you come here for a sec?" he asks. I'm willing to give him a ride, but getting back out in this heat was not part of the plan. "No, it's hot." He waves me over.
"It'll only take a few minutes. Hurry before I get caught."
I really don't want to get out of my car. I'm regretting turning around, even if I am finally getting the conversation with him I've always wanted. It's a toss-up, though. Conversation with Miller comes a close second to the cold blast from my car's air conditioner, so I roll my eyes dramatically before exiting my vehicle. I need him to understand the huge sacrifice I'm making. The fresh oil from the pavement sticks to the bottom of my flip-flops. This road has been under construction for several months, and I'm pretty sure my shoes are now ruined because of it. I lift one of my feet and look at the bottom of my tarred shoe, groaning. "I'm sending you a bill for new shoes."
He looks at my flip-flops questionably.
Those aren't shoes.
I glance at the sign he's hanging on to. It's the city limits sign, held erect by a makeshift wooden platform. The platform is held down by two huge sandbags. Because of the road construction, none of the signs on this highway are cemented into the ground. Miller wipes beads of sweat off his forehead and then reaches down and lifts one of the sandbags, holding it out to me.
Carry this and follow me.
I grunt when he drops the sandbag into my arms. Follow you where? He nudges his head in the direction I came from.
About 20 feet.
He puts his sucker back in his mouth, picks up the other sandbag, and tosses it effortlessly over his shoulder, then begins to drag the sign behind him. The wooden platform scratches against the pavement, and tiny pieces of wood splinter off.
Are you stealing the city limit sign? Nope. Just moving it.
He continues walking while I stand still, staring at him as he drags the sign. The muscles in his forearms are pulled tight, and it makes me wonder what the rest of his muscles look like under this much strain. Stop it, Clara. The sandbag is making my arms sore, and the lust is chipping away at my pride, so I reluctantly begin following him the 20 feet. I was only planning on offering you a ride, I say to the back of his head. I never intended to be an accomplice in whatever this is. Miller props the sign upright, drops his sandbag on the wooden slats, and then takes the other sandbag from my arms. He drops it in place and straightens the sign out so that it's facing the right way. He pulls the sucker back out of his mouth and smiles.
Perfect. Thank you.
He wipes a hand on his jeans.
Can I catch a ride home? I swear it got 10 degrees hotter on my walk here. I should have brought my truck.
I point up at the sign. Why did we just move this sign? He turns his ball cap around and pulls the bill of it down to block more of the sun.
I live about a mile that way,
he says, throwing a thumb over his shoulder.
My favorite pizza place won't deliver outside the city limits, so I've been moving this sign a little every week. I'm trying to get it to the other side of our driveway before they finish construction and cement it back into the ground.
You're moving the city limit. For pizza? Miller begins walking toward my car.
It's just a mile.
Isn't tampering with roadway signs illegal?
Maybe, I don't know.
I start following him. Why are you moving it a little at a time? Why not just move it to the other side of your driveway right now? He opens the passenger door.
If I move it in small increments, it's more likely to go unnoticed.
Good point. Once we're inside my car, I remove my tarred flip-flops and turn up the air conditioning. My papers crumple beneath Miller's feet as he fastens his seatbelt. He bends down and picks up the papers, then proceeds to flip through them and peruse my grades.
All A's,
he says, moving the pile of papers to the back seat.
Does it come natural, or do you study a lot?
Wow, you're nosy. And it's a little of both. I start to pull the car onto the road when Miller opens the console and peeks inside. He's like a curious puppy. What are you doing? He pulls out my can of deodorant.
For emergencies?
He grins and then pops open the lid, sniffing it.
Smells good.
He drops it back into the console, then pulls out a pack of gum and takes a piece, then offers one to me. He's offering me a piece of my own gum. I shake my head, watching as he inspects my car with rude curiosity. He doesn't eat the gum because he still has a sucker in his mouth, so he slides it into his pocket, and then begins to flip through songs on my radio. Are you always this intrusive?
I'm an only child.
He says it like it's an excuse.
What are you listening to?
My playlist is on shuffle, but this particular song is by Greta Van Fleet. He turns up the volume just as the song ends, so nothing is playing.
Is she any good?
It's it's not a she, it's a rock band. The opening guitar riff from the next song blares through the speakers, and a huge smile spreads across his face.
I was expecting something a little more mellow, he yells.
I look back at the road, wondering if this is who Miller Adams is all the time. Random, nosy, maybe even hyper. Our school isn't massive, but he's a senior, so I don't have any classes with him. But I know him well enough to recognize his avoidance of me. I've just never been in this type of situation with him. Up close and personal. I'm not sure what I was expecting, but this isn't it. He reaches for something tucked between the console and his seat, but before I realize what it is, he already has it open. I snatch it from him and toss it in the back seat.
What was that?
He asks. It's a folder with all my college applications, but I don't want to discuss it because it's a huge point of contention between my parents and me. It's nothing.
Looked like a college application to a theater department. You're already sending in college applications?
You are seriously the nosiest person I've ever met. And no. I'm just collecting them because I want to be prepared. And hiding them in my car because my parents would flip if they knew how serious I am about acting. Have you not applied anywhere yet?
Yeah, film school.
Miller's mouth curls up in a grin. Now he's just being facetious. He begins tapping his hands on my dash in beat to the music. I'm trying to keep my eyes on the road, but I feel pulled to him. Partly because he's enthralling, but also because I feel like he needs a babysitter. He suddenly jolts upright, his spine straight, and it makes me tense up because I have no idea what just startled him. He pulls his phone out of his back pocket to answer a call I didn't hear come through over the music. He hits the power button on my stereo and pulls the sucker out of his mouth. There's barely anything left of it, just a tiny little red nub.
Hey, babe, he says into the phone.
Babe? I try not to roll my eyes. Must be Shelby Phillips, his girlfriend. They've been dating for about a year now. She used to go to our school, but graduated last year, and goes to college about 45 minutes from here. I don't have an issue with her, but I've also never interacted with her. She's 2 years older than me, and although 2 years is nothing in adult years, 2 years is a lot in high school years. Knowing Miller is dating a college girl makes me sink into my seat a little. I don't know why it makes me feel inferior, as if attending college automatically makes a person more intellectual and interesting than a junior in high school could ever be. I keep my eyes on the road, even though I want to know every face he makes while on this phone call. I don't know why.
On the way to my house?
He pauses for her answer and then says,
I thought that was tomorrow night.
Another pause. Then,
you just passed my driveway.
It takes me a second to realize he's talking to me. I look at him and he's got his hand over his phone.
That was my driveway back there.
I slam on the brakes. He catches the dash with his left hand and mutters, shit, with a laugh. I was so caught up in eavesdropping on his conversation, I forgot what I was doing.
Nah, Miller says into the phone. I went for a walk and it got really hot, so I caught a ride home.
I can hear Shelby on the other end of the line say, who gave you a ride? He looks at me for a beat and then says,
some dude, I don't know. Call you later.
Some dude? Somebody's got trust issues. Miller ends the call just as I'm pulling into his driveway. It's the first time I've ever seen his house. I've known whereabouts he lived, but I've never actually laid eyes on the home due to rows of trees that line the driveway, hiding what lies beyond the white gravel. It's not what I expected. It's an older house, very small, wood-framed and in severe need of a paint job. The front porch holds the quintessential swing and two rocking chairs, which are the only things about this place that hold appeal. There's an old blue truck in the driveway, and another car, not as old but somehow in worse shape than the house, that sits to the right of the house on cinder blocks, weeds grown up the sides of it, swallowing the frame. I'm kind of taken aback by it. I don't know why. I guess I just imagined he lived in some grandiose home with a backyard pond and a four-car garage. People at our school can be harsh and seem to judge a person's popularity on the combination of looks and money. But maybe Miller's personality makes up for his lack of money because he seems popular. I've never known anyone to talk negatively about him.
Not what you were expecting?
His words jar me. I put the car in park when I reach the end of the driveway and do my best at pretending nothing about his home shocks me. I change the subject entirely, looking at him with narrowed eyes. Some dude, I ask, circling back to how he referred to me on his phone call.
I'm not telling my girlfriend I got a ride with you, he says. It'll turn into a 3-hour interrogation.
Sounds like a fun and healthy relationship.
It is when I'm not being interrogated.
If you hate being interrogated so much, maybe you shouldn't be tampering with the city limit. He's out of the car when I say that, but he leans down to look at me before he closes the door.
I won't mention you were an accomplice if you promise not to mention I'm adjusting the city limit.
Buy me new flip-flops, and I'll forget today even happened. He grins as if I amuse him, then says,
My wallet is inside. Follow me.
I was only kidding, and based on the condition of the home he lives in, I'm not about to take cash from him. But it seems like we somehow developed this sarcastic rapport, so if I suddenly become sympathetic and refuse his money, I feel it might be insulting. I don't mind insulting him in jest, but I don't want to actually insult him. Besides, I can't protest because he's already walking toward his house. I leave my flip-flops in the car, not wanting to track tar into his house, and follow him, barefooted, up the creaky steps, noticing the rotting wood on the second step. I skip over that step. He notices. When we walk into the living room, Miller discards his tarred shoes by the front door. I'm relieved to see the inside of the home fares better than the outside. It's clean and organized, but the decor is ruthlessly trapped in the 60s. The furniture is older. An orange felt couch with your standard homemade afghan draped over the back faces one wall. Two green, extremely uncomfortable-looking chairs face the other. They look mid-century, but not in a modern way. Quite the opposite, actually. I have a feeling this furniture hasn't been changed out since it was purchased, long before Miller was even born. The only thing that looks fairly new is a recliner facing the television, but its occupant looks older than the furniture. I can only see a portion of his profile and the top of his balding, wrinkled head, but what little hair he does have is a shiny silver. He's snoring. It's hot inside. Almost hotter than it is outside. The air I'm gently sucking in is warm and smells of bacon grease. The living room window is raised, flanked by two oscillating fans pointed at the man. Miller's grandfather, probably. He looks too old to be his father. Miller passes through the living room and heads toward a hallway. It begins to weigh on me, the fact that I'm following him to take his money. It was only a joke. Now it feels like an extremely pathetic show of my character. When we reach his bedroom, he pushes open the door, but I remain in the hallway. I feel a breeze sweep through his room and reach me. It lifts the hair from my shoulder, and even though the breeze is warm, I find relief in it.
My eyes scroll around Miller's room. Again, it is not reminiscent of the condition of the outside of his home. There's a bed, full size, flush against the far wall. He sleeps there. Right there, in that bed, tossing about in those white sheets at night. I force myself to look away from the bed, up at a huge poster of the Beatles hanging where a headboard would normally be. I wonder if Miller is a fan of older music, or if the poster has been here since the 60s, much like the living room furniture. The house is so old, I wouldn't doubt if this was his grandfather's room as a teenager. But what really catches my eye is the camera on his dresser. It's not a cheap camera, and there are several different size lenses next to it. It's a setup that would make an amateur photographer envious. You like photography? He follows my line of sight to the camera.
I do.
He pulls open the top drawer of his dresser.
But my passion is film. I want to be a director.
He glances at me.
I'd kill to go to UT, but I doubt I can get a scholarship. So community college it is.
I thought he was making fun of me in the car, but now that I'm looking around his room, it's sinking in that he really might have been telling me the truth. There's a stack of books next to his bed. One of them is by Sidney Lumet called Making Movies. I walk over and pick it up, flipping through it.
You're really nosy,
he mimics. I roll my eyes and set the book down. Does the community college even have a film department? He shakes his head.
No. But it could be a stepping stone to somewhere that does.
He walks closer to me, holding a $10 bill between his fingers.
Those shoes are $5 at Walmart. Go crazy.
I hesitate, no longer wanting to take the money from him. He sees my hesitation. It makes him sigh, frustrated. Then he rolls his eyes and shoves the bill in the front left pocket of my jeans.
The house is shit, but I'm not broke. Take the money.
I swallow hard. He just stuck his fingers in my pocket. And I can still feel them, even though they're no longer there. I clear my throat and force a smile. Pleasure doing business with you. He tilts his head.
Was it? Because you look hella guilty for taking my money.
I'm usually a better actress than this. I'm disappointing myself. I walk toward his doorway, even though I'd love a better look at his bedroom.
No guilt here. You ruined my shoes. You owe me.
I back out of his room and begin to walk down the hallway, not expecting him to follow me, but he does. When I reach the living room, I pause. The old man is no longer in the recliner. He's in the kitchen, standing next to the refrigerator, twisting the lid off a water bottle. He eyes me with curiosity as he takes a sip. Miller sidesteps around me.
You take your meds, Gramps?
He calls him Gramps. It's kind of adorable. Gramps looks at Miller with a roll of his eyes.
I've taken them every damn day since your grandma skipped town. I'm not an invalid. Yet,
Miller quips.
And Grandma didn't skip town, she died of a heart attack.
Either way, she left me.
Miller looks at me over his shoulder and winks.
I'm not sure what the wink is for. Maybe to ease the fact that Gramps seems a little like Mr. Nebbercracker, and Miller is assuring me that he's harmless. I'm beginning to think this is where Miller gets his sarcasm from.
Your nag,
Gramps mutters.
$20 says I outlive you and your entire generation of Darwin Award recipients.
Miller laughs.
Careful, Gramps, your mean side is showing.
Gramps eyes me for a moment, then looks back at Miller.
Careful, Miller. Your infidelity is showing.
Miller laughs at that jab, but I'm kind of embarrassed by it.
Careful, Gramps, your varicose veins are showing.
Gramps tosses the water bottle lid and hits Miller square in the cheek with it.
I'm rescinding your inheritance in my will. Go ahead. You always say the only thing you have worth any value is air.
Gramps shrugs.
Air you won't be inheriting now.
I finally laugh. I wasn't positive their banter was friendly before the lid toss. Miller picks up the lid and fists it in his palm. He motions toward me.
This is Clara Grant. She's a friend of mine from school.
A friend? Okay. I give Gramps a small wave. Nice to meet you. Gramps tilts his head down a little, looking at me very seriously.
Clara Grant.
I nod.
When Miller was 6 years old, he shit his pants at the grocery store because the automatic flusher on public toilets terrified him.
Miller groans and opens the front door, looking at me.
I should have known better than to bring you inside.
He motions for me to head outside, but I don't. I don't know if I'm ready to leave, I say, laughing. I kind of want to hear more stories from Gramps.
I've got plenty,
Gramps says.
In fact, you'll probably love this one. I have a video from when he was 15 and we were at the school.
Gramps! Miller snaps, quickly cutting him off.
Take a nap. It's been 5 minutes since your last one.
Miller grabs my wrist and pulls me out of the house, closing the door behind him. Wait, what happened when you were 15? I'm hoping he finishes that story because I need to know. Miller shakes his head and actually seems a little embarrassed.
Nothing. He makes up shit.
I grin. No, I think you're the one making up shit. I need that story. Miller puts a hand on my shoulder and urges me toward the porch steps.
You're never getting it. Ever.
You aren't aware of my persistence. And I like your grandpa. I might start visiting him, I tease. Once the city limit is moved, I'll order a pepperoni and pineapple pizza and listen to your gramps tell embarrassing stories about you.
Pineapple? On pizza?
Miller shakes his head in mock disappointment.
You aren't welcome here anymore.
I walk down the steps, skipping the rotted one again. When I'm safe on the grass, I turn around. You can't dictate who I get to be friends with. And pineapple on pizza is delicious. It's the perfect combination of sweet and salty. I pull out my phone. Does your gramps have Instagram? Miller rolls his eyes, but he's smiling.
See you at school, Clara. Don't ever come back to my house again.
I'm laughing as I walk back to my car. When I open the car door and turn around, Miller is looking down at his phone. He never once looks back at me. When he disappears inside his house, an Instagram notification pings through on my phone. Miller Adams started following you. I smile. Maybe it's all been in my head. Before I'm even out of the driveway, I'm dialing Aunt Jenny's number.
Chapter 3. Morgan. Morgan, stop. Jenny pulls the knife from my hand and pushes me away from the cutting board. It's your birthday. You aren't supposed to do any of the work. I lean my hip into the counter and watch her begin chopping the tomato. I have to bite my tongue because she's slicing the tomato way too thick. The big sister in me still wants to take over and correct her, even in our 30s. But seriously, though, I could get 3 slices of tomato out of one of hers. Stop judging me, she says. I'm not. Yes, you are. You know I don't cook. That's why I was offering to slice the tomato. Jenny holds the knife up like she's going to cut me. I raise defensive hands and then push myself up onto the counter next to her. So, Jenny says, side-eyeing me. I can tell by the tone of her voice she's about to say something she knows I'm going to disagree with. Jonah and I decided to get married. Surprisingly, I have no outward reaction to that comment. But inside, those words feel like claws, hollowing out my stomach. He proposed?
She lowers her voice to a whisper because Jonah is in the living room. Not really. It was more of a discussion. It makes sense for it to be our next move. That is the least romantic thing I've ever heard. Jenny narrows her eyes at me. Like your proposal was any different? Touché. I hate it when she makes good points. But she's right. There wasn't a fancy proposal, or even a plain proposal. The day after I told Chris I was pregnant, he said, "Well, I guess we should get married." I said, "Yeah, I guess." And that was that. We've been happily married 17 years now, so I don't know why I'm judging Jenny for the situation she got herself in. It just feels different. Jonah and Chris are two completely different people, and at least Chris and I were in a relationship when I got pregnant. I'm not even sure what's going on with Jonah and Jenny. They haven't spoken since the summer after he graduated, and now he's suddenly back in our lives and potentially our family? Jonah's father died last year, and even though none of us had seen or spoken to him in years, Jenny decided to go to the funeral. They ended up having a one-night stand, but then he flew back home to Minnesota the next day. A month later, she found out she was pregnant. I'll hand it to Jonah. He did step up to the plate. He got his life tied up in Minnesota and moved back here a month before Jenny was due. Granted, that was only 3 months ago, so I guess my hesitation comes more from not really knowing who Jonah is at this point in his life. They dated for 2 months when Jenny was in high school, and now he moved across the country to raise a child with her. How many times have the two of you even had sex? Jenny looks at me in shock, like my question is too intrusive. I roll my eyes. Oh, stop acting modest. I'm serious. You had a one-night stand and then didn't see him until you were 9 months pregnant. Have you even been cleared by your doctor yet? Jenny nods. Last week. And? I ask, waiting for her to answer my question. 3 times. Including the one-night stand? She shakes her head. 4, I guess. Or, well, 5. That night counts as 2 times. Wow, they're practically strangers. 5 times. And now you're marrying him? Jenny has finished cutting the tomatoes. She plates them and starts slicing up an onion. It's not like we just met. You liked Jonah just fine when I dated him in high school. I don't understand why you have an issue with it now. I pull back. Let's see. He dumped you, moved to Minnesota the next day, disappeared for 17 years, and now he suddenly wants to commit to you for the rest of his life? I think it's odd that you think my reaction is odd. We have a child together, Morgan. Is that not the same reason you've been married to Chris for 17 years? There she goes, bringing up another good point. Her phone rings, so she wipes her hands and pulls it out of her pocket. Speaking of your child, she answers her cell. Hey, Clara. She has it on speakerphone, so it stings when I hear Clara say, "You aren't with my mother, are you?" Jenny's eyes widen in my direction. She begins backing toward the kitchen door. Nope. Jenny takes the phone off speaker and disappears into the living room. It doesn't bother me that Clara always calls my sister for advice, rather than asking me. The problem is Jenny has no idea how to give Clara advice. She spent her 20s partying, struggling through nursing school, and coming to me when she needed a place to stay. Usually when Clara calls Jenny with something important that Jenny doesn't know how to answer, she'll make an excuse to hang up, and then she'll call me and relay everything. I'll tell her what to tell Clara. Then she'll call Clara back and relay the advice like it came from her. I like the setup, although I'd much rather Clara just ask me. But I get it. I'm her mom. Jenny is the cool aunt. Clara doesn't want me to know about certain things, and I get that. She'd die if she knew that I was aware of some of her secrets. Like when she asked Jenny to make her an appointment to get on birth control a few months ago. Just in case. I hop off the counter and continue slicing the onion. The kitchen door swings open and Jonah walks in. He nudges his head toward the cutting board.
Jenny told me I have to take over because you aren't allowed to do anything.
I roll my eyes and drop the knife, moving out of his way. I stare at his left hand, wondering what a wedding ring is going to look like on his ring finger. It's hard for me to imagine Jonah Sullivan committing to someone. I still can't believe he's back in our lives. And now he's here, in my kitchen, chopping onions on a cutting board that was given to me and Chris at the wedding Jonah didn't even attend.
You okay?
I look up at Jonah. His head is tilted, his cobalt eyes full of curiosity as he waits for me to answer him. Everything inside of me feels like it thickens. My blood, my saliva, my resentment. Yeah, I flash a quick smile. I'm fine. I need to give my focus to something else, anything else. I walk to the refrigerator and open it, pretending to look for something. I've successfully avoided one-on-one conversation with him since he moved back. I don't feel like making it a thing right now, especially on my birthday. The kitchen door swings open and Chris walks in with a pan of burgers fresh off the grill. I close the refrigerator and stare at the kitchen door, which continues to swing back and forth behind him. I hate that door more than I hate any other part of this house. I'm grateful for the house, don't get me wrong. Chris's parents gave it to us as a wedding present when they moved to Florida. But it's the same house Chris grew up in, and his father and his grandfather. The house is a historical landmark, complete with the little white sign out front. It was built in 1918 and reminds me daily that it's over a century old. The creaky floorboards, the plumbing that's constantly in need of repair. Even after we remodeled 6 years ago, the age still screams out any chance it gets. Chris wanted to keep the original floor plan after the remodel, so even though a lot of the fixtures are new, it doesn't help that every room in this house is secluded and closed off from every other room. I wanted an open floor plan. Sometimes I feel like I can't breathe in this house with all these walls. I certainly can't eavesdrop on Jenny and Clara's conversation like I'd like to. Chris sets the pan of burgers on the stove.
Gotta grab the rest and then it'll be ready. Is Clara almost home?
I don't know, I say. Ask Jenny. Chris raises his eyebrows, sensing my jealousy. He exits the kitchen, and the door continues to swing. Jonah stops it with his foot and then goes back to cutting up the vegetables. Even though the four of us used to be best friends, sometimes Jonah seems like a stranger to me. He looks mostly the same, but there are subtle differences. When we were teens, his hair was longer. So long, he'd sometimes pull it back in a ponytail. It's short now and a richer brown. He lost some of the honey-colored streaks that would show up by the end of every summer, but the darker color just brings out the blue in his eyes even more. His eyes have always been kind, even when he was angry. The only time you could tell he was upset was when his angular jawline would tense. Chris is his opposite. He has blonde hair and emerald eyes and a jawline he doesn't keep hidden behind stubble. Chris's job requires him to be clean-cut, so his smooth skin makes him appear years younger than he actually is. And he has this adorable dimple that appears in the center of his chin when he smiles. I love it when he smiles, even after all these years of marriage. When I compare the two of them, it's hard to believe Jonah and Chris are both 35. Chris still has a baby face and could pass for being in his 20s. Jonah looks all of 35 and seems to have grown several inches, even since high school. It makes me wonder how much different I look now than I did as a teenager. I'd like to think I still appear as youthful as Chris, but I certainly feel a lot older than 33. Well, 34. Now. Jonah brushes past me to grab a plate from the cabinet. He glances at me when he does and holds his stare. I can tell by the look on his face he has something to say, but he probably won't say it because he's always inside his head. He thinks more than he speaks. What? I stare back at him, waiting for a response. He shakes his head and turns around.
Nothing. Never mind.
You can't look at me like that and not tell me what you were about to say. He sighs, his back still to me as he grabs the head of lettuce and sticks the knife into it.
It's your birthday. I don't want to bring it up on your birthday.
Too late for that. He faces me again with a hesitant look in his eye. But he concedes and tells me his thoughts.
You've barely spoken to me since I moved back.
Wow. He cuts right to the chase. I can feel my chest and neck heat from the embarrassment of being called out. I clear my throat. I'm speaking to you now. Jonah folds his lips together, like he's trying to remain patient with me.
It's different. Things feel different.
His words tumble around in the kitchen, and I want to dodge them, but the kitchen is too damn small. Different from what?
He wipes his hands on a dish towel. From how it used to be, before I left. We used to talk all the time.
I almost scoff at that ridiculous comment. Of course, things are different. We're adults now, with lives and children and responsibilities. We can't just go back to the carefree friendships we all had back then. It's been over 17 years. Did you think you could show back up and the four of us would fall right back into place? He shrugs.
Things fell back into place with me and Chris, and me and Jenny. Just not with me and you.
I waver between wanting to duck out of the kitchen and yelling all the things I've been wanting to yell at him since he left in such a selfish way. I take a sip of my wine to stall my response. He's staring at me with eyes full of disappointment as I formulate a reply. Or maybe he's staring at me with contempt. Whatever he's feeling, it's the same look he gave me seconds before he walked away all those years ago. And just like back then, I don't know if his disappointment is directed inward or outward. He sighs. I can feel the weight of all his unpackaged thoughts.
I'm sorry I left the way I did, but you can't stay mad at me forever, Morgan.
His words come out quietly, like he doesn't want anyone else to hear our conversation. Then he walks out of the kitchen and ends it. It isn't until this moment that I'm reminded of the heaviness I used to feel when he was around. Sharing the same air with him sometimes felt stifling back then, like he was selfishly taking more of it than he needed, and I was hardly left with any air at all. That same stifling feeling is back again, surrounding me in my own kitchen. Even though he's no longer in the kitchen and the door is swinging back and forth, I can still feel the heaviness bearing down on my chest. As soon as I stop the swinging kitchen door with my foot, Jenny pushes it back open. The conversation I refuse to partake in with Jonah gets shoved to the back of my mind for me to stew over later, because now I need to know everything Clara said to my sister. It was nothing, Jenny says flippantly. She gave some guy from her school a ride, and he started following her on Instagram. She wasn't sure if he was flirting with her. What guy? Jenny shrugs. Morris? Miller? I can't remember. His last name is Adams. Chris is in the kitchen now, setting another pan on the stove.
Miller Adams? Why are we talking about Miller Adams?
You know him? I ask. Chris shoots me a look that lets me know I should know exactly who Miller Adams is. But the name rings no bells.
He's Hank's boy.
Hank? There are still people named Hank in this world? Chris rolls his eyes.
Morgan, come on. Hank Adams? We went to school with him.
I vaguely remember that name. Chris shakes his head.
He's the kid who used to sell me weed. Ended up dropping out junior year. Got arrested for stealing the science teacher's car. And a load of other shit. Pretty sure he's been in jail a few years now.
Chris gives his attention to Jenny.
Too many DUIs or something. Why are we talking about his son? Clara isn't dating him, is she?
Jenny grabs a pitcher of iced tea from the refrigerator and closes the door with her hip. No. We're talking about a celebrity named Miller Adams. You're talking about someone local. Different people. Chris blows out a rush of air.
Thank God. That's the last family she needs to be involved with.
Anything involving his daughter and a boy is not an easy subject with Chris. He takes the tea from Jenny and leaves the kitchen to go place it on the dining room table. I laugh once I know Chris is out of earshot. A celebrity. Jenny shrugs. I don't want to get her in trouble. Jenny has always been quick on her feet. She's so good at improvising, it's scary. I glance at the door to make sure it's closed, then look back at her. Jonah thinks I hate him. Jenny shrugs. Feels that way sometimes. I've never hated him. You know that. It's just, you barely know him. We have a child together. It takes 30 seconds to make a baby. Jenny laughs.
It was more like 3 hours, if you really want to know.
I roll my eyes. I don't want to know. Chris yells from the dining room to let us know the food is ready. Jenny walks out of the kitchen with the burgers, and I plate the rest of the vegetables and take them to the table. Chris sits across from Jenny, and I sit next to Chris, which means Jonah is directly across from me. We successfully avoid eye contact while making our plates. Hopefully the rest of dinner will go much the same way. It's all I really want for my birthday, little to no eye contact with Jonah Sullivan.
Are you excited for tomorrow?
Chris asks Jenny. Jenny nods vigorously. You have no idea. She's a nurse at the same hospital where Chris is head of quality control. She's been on maternity leave since Elijah was born 6 weeks ago, and tomorrow is her first day back. The front door bursts open, and Clara's best friend, Lexi, walks in. You started eating without me? You're perpetually late. We always start without you. Where's Clara? On her way, I guess, Lexi says. I was going to catch a ride with her, but Mom let me use the car. Lexi looks around the table, taking in who all is here. She nods at Jonah. Hey, Uncle Teacher. Hi, Lexi, he says, seemingly annoyed at the nickname she's given him.